At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Tom freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
What have we here?
Go fuck yourself. And I am a sports entertainer.
Ladies, gentlemen, and bees, this is the Eat Sleep Elite podcast.
Shout out Adam.
Who the fuck is Adam?
Who the fuck is
Adam and Eve, bro?
Oh,
sure as hell ain't Adam and Steve.
Oh fuck. Well, gosh. Shit, at least it wasn't in the first 5 seconds. Fuck.
Make sure you guys, whatever podcast platform you happen to be listening to this on, make sure you follow and or subscribe. And you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Bane Duke. That's BaneDuke. And at O'Charlie with an X instead of an A. Also at Eat Sleep Elite on Twitter. Make sure you tune into our Eat Sleep Elite Fantasy podcast every week as well. We be reviewing right now The Boys, House of the Dragon, and The Acolyte on Disney Plus. I guess I should clarify, not all of them are on Disney Plus, just The Acolyte is. But, you know, we're reviewing all those shows. We'll have other stuff coming down the pipe from that. And we have our weekly wrestling reviews on Tuesday. And that being said, though, Charlie, let's get into Forbidden Door. Let's just, we also have our special guest, Bray. You already heard him on the show. Our boy that we used to do the Squadcast, and now going back to the Raw Deal podcast days that we used to do all the way back in 2017, you know. I'm glad we touch base with you every now and then on some of these shows, Brady. So before I move too far ahead, Brady, how have you been? Like, what's going on with you? How have you been, man?
I've been doing great. And I'd really quick, just if you're listening right now, put your hand up. I want to give you a high five. Ready? High five in 3, 2, 1. Wow, that was fantastic. All right. I'm going to be a dad in a prospective 9 days. Daughter's almost here. So, first time kid, that'll be fun, man.
I'm shout a out Bray production.
I'm on summer break. Shout out Adam, bro. Way to put it. Way to put
shout
it.
Shout out Adam 2.0, aka Brady.
And to set the table, Brady, this is your first AEW pay per view you've seen this year, right? So you're kind of adding a cool perspective to the show.
I was in and out watching one with Dart.
Okay,
but I am the definition of a casual. Generally, if I watch AEW matches, it's Dart and I were talking about it. He said a match was good. I'll try to pull it up, find it somewhere, and watch it or watch some clips. That's about the extent. I try to know what's going on in storylines, but that's about it. Unless something catches my eye, which I do with a lot of WWE as well.
Exactly.
Generally, all wrestling is kind of that's my vibe, man. If I hear that it's something that I should check out for good, for better or worse, then I'll check it out.
Absolutely. So yeah, I just want to get that. So it's kind of a cool, it's going to be cool to have your viewpoint on some of how these stories ended up playing out. And we didn't really set a lot going up for the future, but I guess we have 9 weeks until the next pay-per-view to do that. So yeah, that being said, let's run through Zero Hour real quick here, and then we'll get through the rest of the show. As always, we are recording this right after. So if there is another brawl out on the scrum, we don't know. It hasn't happened yet for us. So we will not be talking about that. They do an impromptu match with Kyle Fletcher defeating Serpentico. I think this is AEW's way of kind of, they low-key acknowledge the title that Kyle Fletcher dropped, because this was not on any cards anywhere. They kind of just threw it in the ring. So Kyle Fletcher got the first match of the night. And we'll talk more of his title reign on when we're doing Ring of Honor on the next Eat Sleep Elite weekly episode. So our Kings of the Black Throne defeated Tomohiro Ishii and Kyle O'Reilly, Private Party, and then Roderick Strong and Gabe Kidd. This is honestly kind of just a showcase of big flashy moves to kind of get everyone here. Nothing of value. Malakai Black got the win over Zay. Why they pin Zay after pushing Private Party? I don't know, but whatever.
I just want to say I called that shit. I never believed in Zay. Not because I don't think he's really talented. I just don't think the people in the back actually think that Zay has anything worth using, which I think is kind of sad, you know?
Yeah, I would have just pinned Kyle and got it over with, or Roddy, but hey, to each their own. They probably just didn't want someone in New Japan eating it, so that was kind of where I thought We had Willow Nightingale and Tom Nakano defeat Chris Statler and Momo Watanabe. It's a pretty decent match, just setting the table more for their Owen Hart match on Wednesday. We had Mariah May defeat Saraya in a Women's Owen Hart Foundation Cup quarterfinal. Mariah May was wearing Toni Storm's gear from 2022 Forbidden Door. This is a pretty decent match. Mariah pretty much just ran the whole thing. And other than that, again, this 0 hour was pretty forgettable. you did not need to watch this. And then our last 0 hour match was the Lucha Bros and Místico defeating Hiromu Takahashi, Titan, and Yoda Tsuji. Ko getting like holy shit chance the second he walked out. People really cared about him. This was actually a pretty decent match. That being said, I was a little, you know, who are we kidding? The team with Místico wasn't going to lose. So,
yeah, I got a bone to pick with you, bro.
Chalk that up.
You know that Penta is my favorite, and I didn't even realize he was in this match.
Yeah, Lucha Bros and Místico. It's kind of a big deal because now that they're not under AAA contract, they were able to wrestle with someone in CMLL. They were actually able to be at this pay-per-view for the first time.
That's cool.
Big point of last year is there was a match pitch between Andrade and Will Ospreay, and AAA would not let them do it. No one that signed at AAA was at this show. But all these guys are off from those contracts. Let's get into the meat of the show. We kicked off with MJF taking on and defeating Hechicero. I thought this was a pretty fun match. It set the tone for the rest of the night. It was pretty smart to send MJF out first, I think, in terms of the grand scheme of the pay-per-view.
Yeah, we were a little confused at first. And then we said, you know what? Long Island boy. Send him out there.
Send him out first because that back half, you didn't want to throw him into there.
I mean, yeah, it gets the crowd cooking for sure. I mean, you know, they're all hyped up because they got their boy out there. We know he's going to win, obviously, you know. Hechicero, we also know from, I don't know how much you've seen of Hechicero, Brady, if anything. But
I was not familiar with him at all.
From the few matches, we saw a few appearances of, there was a big, I want to say, what was it, like in like the early couple, first couple months of the year, Charlie, there was like a big invasion of CMLL guys that was really awesome where like they were fight, like, it was like a mini feud with the BCC. That culminated in like an 8-man tag or something. And Hechicero was like right in the mix. And he had a match with Brian Danielson that was like ridiculously technically like insane. Like it was crazy. Like, and so
I was a little worried that Hechicero, because he got virtually no offense in this match. I was a little worried that they were just going to have all the AEW people just run through everybody else based on how he set the table here.
But yeah.
That is kind of the precedent with these kinds of like Worlds Collide type pay-per-views, you know, like the problem is like, I think a lot of people just expect that. That's what they're trained to like expect from wrestling. But I mean, really most Forbidden Doors have been, I mean, it usually ends up pretty even with the numbers, right? Maybe a slight advantage to AEW, Charlie, a lot of times, but like, I'm not even sure.
Well, a lot of times they'll mix them together. So you get a little bit of a loop.
It's a bit of a wash, like when it's like two guys from AEW and a Japan guy, and then two guys from Japan and an AEW guy, and that's the three teams, or the two teams, you know what I mean? So like who wins if one team wins, you know what I mean? Like,
but MJF's second match, being back, he's looking as good as always. He's still one of the only wrestlers in this company that really knows how to play to the crowd. And it sticks out. Every time he's on a big show, it sticks out. The crowd cares about him. They follow him. I seriously think he should be fucking teaching people how to do it. And maybe they don't want to learn from a 28-year-old how to wrestle, but son of a bitch, they should listen. Because he knows how to get the crowd in the palm of his hand. And it's not just in Long Island. So
this guy studies Ric Flair and Roddy Piper. I think if anybody could learn anything from anybody, it would be that guy. I mean,
look at all the people in professional wrestling right now that are considered rookies and, you know, new to us. So like buying a used car that runs really well. All of a sudden you look and you go, oh my God, this guy's 40 and I've never heard of him before because he just finally figured it out. There's no reason for that when you can learn from people and put your pride aside and be really good at 30.
It always makes me think of Damian Priest because he came into NXT 41? So late. Yeah, he came into NXT so late, but it's like
– and it's good for him, but most people would look and say, oh, he's still growing. It's like, nah, he doesn't have any time to grow.
When Ziggler was calling AJ Styles a rookie, it's like, wait a minute. Dude, this guy's been wrestling longer than you. Yeah, this was a pretty good opener. Other than that, this was kind of just, you know, it was the shortest match of the night, to be honest.
It was.
Up next, we had the Acclaim and Hiroshi Tanahashi take on the Elite, where the Elite ended up getting the victory here. And I got to tell you, we are suffering from Acclaimed fatigue. And the fact that it came into the pay-per-view, they had just crickets. Second match of the night on the main pay-per-view, crickets.
The team that we were screaming from the top of the rooftops that they missed their opportunity to make them tag team champions, and now they're getting crickets on the pay-per-view. What a titanic fall from grace.
Every time they get these titles, they fall on their ass, and now you've overexposed them, and you got to just pull it back. So, yeah, Brady, I'll toss it to you here first. Any thoughts on this match? I don't know. I wasn't the biggest fan of this one in total, but yeah, what'd you think?
I hated this match.
Yeah.
There were a couple matches on the show where I just felt it was so formulaic. And here's the issue is when you have a guy like me that's been watching pro wrestling, even if I'm casual now, I've been watching pro wrestling since SummerSlam 2002 was when I was a big Brock Lesnar guy at the time. So we're talking about, I'm going on 22 years now of watching pro wrestling. And it was so obvious where the match was going. And when you have teams that are supposed to be, like we were just talking about MJF playing to the crowd. When you have teams that their whole gimmick is supposed to be their gimmick, to playing to the crowd, and it's not over one way or the other, it really makes a match suffer overall.
And I think we feel that because they're trying to, this comedy gimmick that they're trying to do with the Elite is not working. You have fucking Okada. Just let him be a badass. The comedy thing worked for a week, and then it felt like, oh, let's see if we can keep this going. We need them to show up Wednesday and take it back to being serious.
Well, and the Elite used to be those guys, right?
Yeah.
Look at how people view we'll just say the Young Bucks. People viewed the Young Bucks as a fun, young, upstart team years ago that, you know, tons of super kicks, they're going to be goofballs, you love them for them. And then they started to refine their art, and now you're starting to say, all right, who's the best tag team in the world? Is it them? Is it, you know, at the time we were talking Authors of Pain, FTR, fucking
DIY.
New Day. I was like, we're talking, you know, across companies about them. I think they stayed a little too stagnant where you look over at the New Day as an example over in WWE, they kind of had to get serious or at least more serious for people to take them seriously. And now it's almost like they're reverting back to where they were before, when in reality, you're a great team. You don't need the shenanigans. You just don't.
Yeah, not in the slightest, especially when it's not working. Duke, any thoughts on this you had for Tanahashi and the Acclaimed?
This is fascinating because Brady was, you know, Brady is usually the kind of viewer that while he will do the opposite of what I'll do, like you can usually get a pretty good idea of where I'm at with a match while we're watching it. Because I'll let you know how I'm feeling. And during this match, I don't know if you guys remember, this was one of two matches during this show that I said, I just do not give two shits and a fuck what happens. And that's sad when the Young Bucks and the tag team championships and the continental championships and the guy you probably just paid like $10 million for is a part of that. You know what I mean? On the biggest show of the year, that's not all in probably. Forbidden Door is probably that, right? You know what I mean? So
in terms of partnerships and money, yeah.
I mean,
there's another 6-man tag on this show featuring Jericho that kicked this match's ass.
Yeah, you look at the two names, you look at Okada and Tanahashi, those are names that don't feel like they fit in this match. If you're looking at it on paper,
yeah,
I'm like, no, you're 100% those guys right. were in this match.
This mixture of Elite not working with the new gimmick and the Acclaimed, and you just said, like you just said, we have to look forward to a tag title match with these groups.
Oh, fuck yeah, that's the match is already planned. They already beat them.
I don't know. Like, unless someone gets a fucking serious overhaul. You can't be walking out to crickets with these groups because that's not a good sign. Then again, going into our next match, it flipped on a dime because wrestling was back. We had Bryan Danielson take on and defeat Shingo Takagi in the men's Owen Hart Foundation Cup. This was kind of the one match everyone had bookmarked on their Owen Hart, you know, when we got the eight names announced, well, seven plus a wild card. Can't wait to see that match. could it be the final? Could it be this? Could it be that? Well, just like they've done before, they said, we're going to do one of the matches at Forbidden Door. Choosing it to be Danielson and Takagi, I think, proved out to be the right point. Takagi was beating the fuck out of this guy. I mean, he was seriously beating the ever-living shit out of him. They did wrestle back in 2010 in Dragon Gate. And it from the niche crowd that reviewed that match, that is on Cage Match, for example, they were really into it. So I'm sure it kicked ass. And, you know, the footage out there is probably brilliant. But this was just a really fun, hard-hitting wrestling match that it had pretty good heat going into it just because of who the two are. It's kind of your, is it safe to say, your top wrestler now in New Japan. Now that Okada, Ospreay, all these guys are gone, Ingo kind of takes your workhorse title. It's him and Zack Sabre Jr.
He probably wins the G1 if it's not Zack, right?
It's him and Zack who are kind of your big two now, and neither of them are in the title scene. Jesus. That's a whole diff. New Japan booking. That's a whole nother fucking... Yeah, this was... I really enjoyed this. Duke. Danielson, the quest to All In versus Swerve Strickland has begun.
The greatest wrestler of all time. Yeah, I mean, so I'll just go through what I was putting down in my notes a little bit. Like, to me, this was like a masterclass in like a mixing of styles between the hard-hitting sort of Japanese style. And because Brian's gone back to that sort of, you know, obviously very technically, you know, submission and ground and mat MMA style-based wrestling that's sort of the Blackpool Combat Club has come to embody as a whole, that style of wrestling. Mixed with that like hard hitting style of Japan, like I was saying, Shingo's also a guy that does a lot of like ground based stuff as well. We've seen Charlie. That was kind of the thing that surprised us when we were watching Shingo matches last year. Was he does a lot more like who was it he wrestled? Was it his matches with Taichi? Maybe there was one of them where they did a lot of like it almost felt like they were going for an MMA vibe.
He opened my eyes to how great Taichi is as a wrestler.
They did some really, really fascinating stuff in their series of matches last year. But anyway, the mix of styles, I feel like, really did set off well in this match. And people often talk about clashes of styles, but I think there's a different thing that you can do sometimes in wrestling where you don't clash them against. It's not almost like they're not juxtaposed. They almost complement each other in a way, you know, like where because Brian is that sort of the hard-nosed edge to him, like wrestler that, you know, the North American scene, the indie scene produces with that Ring of Honor style that he helped to, you know, create back in the 2000s and cement really with Nigel McGuinness and all that. I think when that mixes with that hard-hitting Japanese style, it just creates like a visually stunning thing to watch. I really want to hear what Brady thought about this because I could literally ramble on this for like 30 minutes because this is exactly the kind of shit I love in wrestling. Brady, what you got?
Sometimes it's nice to keep it simple. Sometimes wrestling is all about, you know, I always think of it as a really athletic dance, almost like a choreographed dance with some improv in there. Bryan Danielson is really good at getting beat up. Shingo Takagi is really good at beating people up. And they showcased it in the match. And yeah. Like I said, it seems like I'm downplaying it, but that's all you need sometimes, especially with the antics of the match before it and some of the other things on the show. When you look at this as pieces of the puzzle, the fun stuff to do if you're building a puzzle is the outsides. You got your corners, your edges. It's the nice, simple, fun things to do. No hard work. You've got all that hard stuff in the middle, but the most satisfying piece, the one right there in the middle. And that's what this match was.
Absolutely. And an advantage these guys have going into this match is everyone already, you know, has in their head how great they are. So they have like an excitement, an expectation. And when you hit that so quick, like they did, it's literally a fucking sandbox at that point. You can do whatever you want. And they had a lot of fun. This is a very, very good match. And we followed it up with Timeless Toni Storm's best match of this AEW Women's Championship run that she's had. This has been a very, very strong championship reign, and Mina Shirakawa, they lived up to the hype that people had for this match. You know, Mina's gotten a lot of love over the past couple of years in being one of the fastest rising stars in stardom. And you can go down the list of everyone who's done that has gone on to be great things. But the past year or so, it's been Mina Shirakawa and it's been Julia. And look where they're both at. Julia's on her way to NXT. And Mina Shirakawa, she's doing her thing in AEWs. The States came calling for both of them. Toni Storm, she has fully embraced this style during the match of her character that it doesn't feel like the same girl that we saw wrestling a year ago that wrestled on this show. Like the outcast Toni Storm a year ago compared to this match today, it was pretty wild, the difference of it. And yeah, I thought this was a pretty enjoyable match. And I'm glad that this women's championship is really getting strength in these defenses. And it's not just one-offs that we're like, my God, well, another name checked off the list, but what the hell happened here? So the biggest hype moment, though, was the post-match. They had a three-way kiss, and Excalibur says, that's just like we practiced on the pre-show. Yeah. And Nigel McGuinness is standing up at commentary. He's applauding with tears in his fucking eyes.
Nigel McGuinness might be the greatest commentator of all time.
He is just such a... He's the perfect mix of, like, what I used to love about when Corey Graves was really in his fucking prime. And you combine that with, like, just a super fucking wrestling brain. It's the perfect mix that I used to love. Yeah, if any guys have anything on this match that you wanted to hit on, or are we moving on to Sabre?
I think it's just impressive. Because people used to complain a lot about the women's division in AEW in general. I mean, we used to complain. I think for what was it, probably like 2, 3 months, 4 months in a row, we were bitching about how the women wouldn't get more than one segment on the show. It felt like on any show, like
they didn't have enough talent to get more than one segment. They had to build it.
There'd be a Britt Baker match and a promo with some other person. And that was it, or vice versa.
Yep. And Britt wouldn't even get, and then Britt literally had to go on fucking social media and be like, I can't get promo time. What the fuck? Like, anyway, but just to see how far it's come is insane, because this title reign, like you said, has been very good. And it just amazes me how it continues to deliver on each occasion. Do you think there's a chance that Mina we get under contract in AEW at some point in the future?
I'm sure. They've teased it now of how much she's going to be a legit draw in America.
The crowd got really into her by the end. Like, the crowd was cooking tonight.
And you can always pinpoint it back to, this is worth mentioning, when AEW brought in Jennifer Pepperman to creative, and they said her sole focus was pretty much, this is the one they brought in when they signed Mercedes, that we're making a big shift here. Jennifer has, I mean, it's been 5 months. It's night and day.
It's night and day, yeah.
She signed on.
100%, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Do you think they got screwed card positioning-wise? Do you think that didn't help, like, where they were in the card? Because I kind of had that thought a little bit. I was like, I feel like this kind of is going to get buried a little bit in the minutia of the show, but maybe not.
I think the card placement was perfect this show. There's not a single match I would have switched around.
That's fair.
I mean, if you wanted to, maybe swap MJF a little later with the ladder match, but I think the ladder match served its purpose too. So, all right, let's get into Zack Sabre Jr. taking on and defeating Orange Cassidy. I can't make this point more clear.
Play the soundbite. Play the soundbite. It's got nothing to do with the guy, but come on.
Britt O'Brien, I hope you're wrapped up in cotton wool, darling. You better not be out there clam digging. Bloody clam digging.
Rarely get to use Zack Sabre Jr. on our show, but the importance of Zack Sabre Jr. pinning Orange Cassidy, who, again, if we had a ranking system still, Orange Cassidy is far and away the number one, especially now that Will Ospreay's lost. But Orange Cassidy he wins important matches every single time he's in them. This is essentially putting him over the top non-champion in AEW that's not named Bryan Danielson. Or that's not fucking injured. Let's be real.
Isn't Cassidy the longest reigning champion ever in AEW? Like, isn't his reign longer than like what MJF had his world title? Or am I tweaking?
Are we counting Jade's for the women? I don't know if it is for the men, but Jade still holds the longest for the women.
You know what? I can get back to you all on this statistically wise, but I don't remember. But it's something. It's one of the longest reigning champions in AEW's history. Like, period, straight up. So
you mix the technical wrestling of Zack Sabre, but the comedy serious when Orange Cassidy really wants to bust it out. And 3 years in a row, Forbidden Door, he's always busted it out. I thought this match worked really well together.
Hold on.
I was very, very happy with the result. I thought this was, for Zack Sabre Jr., for the rest of this year, he's made a mission statement similar to Bryan Danielson's, but for New Japan. So it's championship or bust. So I am very excited for this. Thought the match was awesome. Brady, Zack Sabre Jr., Orange Cassidy, very different styles. And it worked for the very different styles. Yeah, what'd you think of this match as Zack made him verbally submit, back-to-back verbal submissions?
Do we see Sabre on AEW television semi-regularly or no?
No. Just like this month,
he came to do the build, right?
Yeah,
we see him around the times that there's two shows. So this one and Soul Dream, where we get Japanese stars on AEW shows, and we get them. He'll usually be on in the lead up to both of those shows. So maybe 3 or 4 weeks out of the year.
And as we saw later on in the show, I think now that we put in the context of this Wrestle Dynasty show that they're going to run through NJPW, I think they're going to let this sit. You don't tell any storylines on TV about it in AEW or in New Japan. You literally just sit on it, let them chirp back and forth, do little jabs in interviews, do some stuff on social media, but don't bring it up on TV at all. Every time they try to bring it up with either of them on TV, I think you have a salty Orange Cassidy, you bring an aggressive Orange Cassidy, you run it back at that New Japan show, and it's a massive match for both companies. And I think you have Orange Cassidy go in and beat him on his home turf there.
Book it. I'm in.
That could be fresh new champion, Zack Sabre Jr. Yeah.
I hate to do, you know, fantasy booking. I know that a lot of people hate fantasy booking.
That's what our show has been built on.
That's what we love here. Hold on. That's what we fucking love here.
Give me what I want.
Exactly. I think that it's good. They told a good story, and there's more things that they can do with it. The one thing you don't want to do, if they do decide to run it back, which I think that they should want to if you're AEW, just to keep credibility with Orange Cassidy, and he doesn't have a title where he's pigeonholed.
Yeah, Orange Cassidy's been pinned 2 times in singles matches in the past, like, 16 months.
Yeah.
And he's wrestled more than anyone in singles matches.
It makes too much sense. That's probably what they'll end up doing. That way, neither company has egg on their face. This looks great for New Japan.
So. Which harkens back to that point we were talking about earlier. You got to give New Japan some love in this. You can't just have AEW beat them every single time.
Exactly.
Because just beat one of the unbeatable AEW guys, the guys that is so consistent that they literally have. There was Charlie. I mean, what was it? Probably like 6 months in a row, this guy opened up every Dynamite pretty much with his fucking music, and the crowd would go insane, and he would have a title match that would go 20 minutes to start the show, and it would carry the beginning of the show for months.
You'll get by letting, you know, old bones president of the company, Hiroshi Tanahashi, take a pin if you can get Zack Sabre Jr. beating Orange Cassidy. You don't mind that trade off. Yeah, this is a very, very solid match. One of the results I think was very important tonight that they needed to get was this one. The other one they didn't, so I'll get into that in a second. Next was the best 6-man tag of the night. The new Samoa Joe faction. Fuck it, Samoa Joe Gun with Hook, Katsuyori Shibata. As if he didn't know, he did have his brain taken out of his head. It was sitting on the table.
Yeah, honestly, whose brain does he have now? Was it a transplant? Have we talked about it?
It was on the table.
What'd they have in there in the meantime? Water?
How did they stay alive?
I know what was in there in the meantime. Brain juice.
Juice. They defeated I am the learning tree. Chris Jericho, Big Bill, and Jeff Cobb. If there's one match on this card tonight that you were looking at.
Wait, I know whose brain he has now. They gave him Jericho's. That's why Jericho has how he is now.
They gave him Chad Gable's brain since he got shot.
City added to donate. You're right.
It all goes back. But this is the one match on the card that, like, seemingly was unanimous that everyone was kind of like, did Jericho need to be on this pay-per-view? Seriously? I got to tell you, this match was fun. This was just a fun 6-man tag. The Samoa Joe and Jeff Cobb one-on-one. I mean, they immediately tagged both in, and the crowd starts fucking going nuts. That's not a match I really ever thought about, but the second that they were in the ring together, I'm like, okay, I'm in.
Samoa job.
Booked that for Wrestle Dream then, fucking Joe versus Cobb. Fuck it.
Cobb is holding his New Japan Television Championship, so.
Oh, that would actually be a great match. Joe loves to be the king of television.
Yeah, there's something there.
I know how you do it. You get Atlantis Jr. drops the title for Joe. We get another, like, 5-month Joe reign as television champion where he doesn't defend it on Ring of Honor, right? And that's just chill. We're fine. And then Joe faces, and they have TV title for the king of all of international championship televisions.
All of them. But there was please retire chance for Jericho that he quickly played up. And I thought everyone came out of this match looking good. the new faction of Joe Hook and Shibata, I think it's yet again another presence in this Trios division that they've seriously revived. This is another team that we're going to get really fun matches out of, whether it's against Bullet Club Gold, whether it's against the Patriarchy. They had a good match at the fucking Learning Tree, plus Jeff Cobb.
I am the Learning Tree.
God. Yeah, I know we're not doing Collision review this week, but holy shit. It was absolutely awful what Jericho was doing on that show. It was, as Randy Orton once said, the drizzling shits. I mean, it was real bad. But yet again, here he goes on a pay-per-view, and I think he did perfectly fine. So, Duke, any thoughts or notes yet on this one, or are we just steamrolling to the ladder match?
Yeah, I got to disappoint you here. This was the other match on the show I didn't care about at all. Sorry, Hook.
Hey, fair enough. Fair enough. Brady?
I'll always support what Jericho does. He has earned my respect enough to give him a shot.
100%.
Give him a fair shake in anything that he does. And so that's always where I'll be. I will never look at something that Jericho is doing, no matter how dumb it looks at the time. I will never look at a gimmick, at least. Maybe a match. You put him in against a hyper-athletic person who he has no business being in the ring with for, you know, a substantial amount of time. Sure, I'll judge the company. But if you're rolling with a new gimmick and you're like, I don't know about it, you got to let it breathe because he's going to make something of it.
You'll get moments like this. So in ring, you'll get moments like Collision.
That exact thing you were talking about, Brady, they did like literally 2 weeks ago with Private Party.
See, there you go. I didn't even know.
Just let it breathe. And next we have the ladder match for the TNT Championship. Sometimes in these ladder matches, it gets a little formulaic at times, you know. But this is one of those ladder matches that they had a focus. The focus was straight up, let's just get fucking dangerous. Let's just say fuck it. These six guys, Mark Briscoe was in this match. I'm fully convinced his character didn't give a shit about winning the title. He just wanted to inflict pain. I'm fully convinced that's the way he ran with it. I thought this was just straight. It was straight up carnage. Like, I really liked this match. However, Takeshita had to win this fucking title. I'm sorry. He had to win this thing.
And it's Joe.
There's a multitude of reasons why. And you know what? At this point, they literally have a golden star sitting in their fucking hands. And now he's gone to Japan. He's going to be in the G1 next month. I understand giving it to Jack Perry. It's the safe decision. It's an easy decision. But now the Elite holds, you know, these four titles. The gimmick's not doing too hot. That's one of the only gimmicks that's lost steam recently. Like, a lot of stuff's picking up steam. The Elite's losing steam, and just I was not in love with the result. But it's okay. Look, getting my pussy hurt out of the way for Takeshita not winning, I really like the match. And even the Dante Martin and Leo Rush stare-off that has so many fucking meanings to it, and they actually did end up hitting moves on each other. So we'll see how that, you know, plays off in this mentorship. That's one.
I know
of
what Leo's gonna do. He's gonna recruit right Lee Johnson, and it's gonna be the darkness within Leo, because he's been overlooked in Japan and overlooked in America and overlooked in AEW, and he's gonna say Lee has been too.
Could be good. But Brady, a good carnage, fucking shit slinging ladder match. You can't ever really go wrong with. If you would have told me Mark Briscoe slung some shit in this match, I'd believe you. Straight up. I would straight up believe you.
He does look kind of, what would you say? What's the word you would say to say one look more like, kind of like a monkey? He looks like very Sibian-like, you know? Like
He was fucking ape. Really messy. Halfway through the match, yeah. I said, he reminds me of Sandman 2008.
Sandman in 2008 was on pills and beer.
Everything is just sloppy, and I can see why the crowd loves him. Like, I totally get it. He's kind of he's like a legacy pick for a lot of people really like him. I totally get it. But dear God, he's someone where you do not need that man holding your title unless you're doing some weird 24/7 that's the whole point. Hardcore-esque title. That I don't know. I'm sure he's been champion and everything, but that's not a guy.
They haven't done a single thing with him as champion since he won it.
Okay, cool.
Ring of Honor world champion.
Odd. Okay.
Seriously.
He's the current champion?
Yes.
That was the championship.
Not even on TV.
He hasn't been on once since he won the championship.
Yeah. That's a guy. See, I don't even know that. That's a guy where I'm like, he's a fun guy that you can watch. It's kind of like with, I don't know, you look at like Claudio. He's just a really good backbone of the company guy. You could throw a title on him. You can put him in a bunch of situations. He'll always kind of do his job. But I don't know if he's the guy that you're going to
want him if you hadn't had to put him in Ring of Honor. But worked out.
And once again, you can absolutely run it with him as like a fun little thing. But you're not going to do a year and a half, 2 year, like, this is our guy. He's going to carry the show. He's going to end every show. I just don't see that in Mark Briscoe, but I don't know. I think Jack Perry, I mean, he's fine.
He's fine. Exactly. It's a safe pick. I mean, look, he's got the scapegoat gimmick. He's got the most heat right now. It's the safe pick. And look, he is an AEW original at the end of the day. This is his first singles title, not counting the FTW one, because does anyone even remember him having it? No.
What happened to that one Nick kid that died?
Nick, he's in the patriarchy. He's with Christian Cage. They're going for the
Trios. Yeah, that's Christian right Cage's now. Son. You better show some respect.
Shit, my bad.
Yeah, they went back to that storyline.
Yo,
that
shout out Reproduction. Shout out Adam.
Shout out Adam. But no, we talk about our smorgasbord of AEW pay-per-views, and you're always going to kind of get one of these fucking junkyard matches. And it delivered again. I got to tell you, though, none of these guys look on Takeshita's level. They just don't. He sticks out every single time he's in one of these matches. It's kind of fucking ridiculous. I mean, it really is. But yeah, let's jump into Mercedes Moné taking on and defeating Stephanie Vaquer for the TBS and New Japan Strong Women's Championships. We had kind of figured one of the things with New Japan and Mercedes, since they didn't, you know, they made this title for her. She gets injured in the tournament. It makes sense she's going to get a little run with it. I thought this was a very important match for Mercedes, and I thought she delivered. So they're in New York. She's a big Boston fan. So she actually ends up having to play the heel a little bit here because Boston just won a championship in basketball. So that was kind of fun. She embraced it a little bit, but it's very important for Mercedes now that she's back from that injury that was like 7-8 months that she looks like she can hang with someone that is as athletic as Stephanie Vaquer. And she did. She didn't look out of touch at all to me. And post-match, Dr. Britt Baker returns. Now, she hasn't wrestled in a fucking long time. Now, this was... She kind of took some time off while she was healthy. She came back. So, she hasn't wrestled since September 16th, where she wrestled on Collision against Chris Statlander for the TBS Championship. Yeah, we're talking 10 months, give or take. And this was your core, like, she was the women's division for about 3 years. It was her and Hikaru Shida and anyone else that could try and get along to go for the ride. Bringing her back, doing a big program with Mercedes that's going to probably blow off at All In. Is there, I mean, honestly, I don't think there is a bigger two you could do for the TBS championship. It's crazy that it's not for the world championship. We've gone on, and I mean, these past couple months, we've seen the focus. They want both of these championships to feel very, very important. And
there's nothing wrong with your secondary title looking just as strong, if not stronger. And it's all about the person that it's on.
Yeah. Look who's holding it, arguably, outside of MJF, the biggest draw in the company. Hmm. That's a really good sign for that title. And yeah, Brady, Mercedes Moné, she's now in AEW. I don't know if you've seen her wrestle in AEW. She's only had a couple matches.
I had not.
Yeah. Well, what'd you think of this? And what'd you think of Stephanie Vaquer? Sure, this was your first look at her.
Yeah, I mean, so Mercedes has always been great, obviously. Yeah. Great storyteller. Boston gal, go Celtics. Jason Tatum's the GOAT. But no, I think, so I want to really touch on Britt Baker coming back. because she was clearly in a spot, like you said, where she just was the company. You can only grow so much when you're just head and shoulders better than everybody else. So it almost made her look worse at the time when she had to carry the title because, sorry, a lot of the girls just weren't there yet.
No.
When she had the title before. And that's not her fault. And that's not her job to train people. You know, she wants to be Aaron Rodgers and just sabotage every rookie that comes in. She has every right to do it.
CM Punk has made a career on it.
Exactly. So for her, it must be nice to have someone good to work with, but also a little chip on your shoulder of, oh, you forgot about me, huh? So
yeah, she's returning to a landscape of there's a lot of like sharks now in this women's division, even that weren't here in September.
Well, and that's what I was thinking earlier when you guys were talking about the other women's match is look at the landscape of AEW as a whole. And how many years has the company been going now? Year 4 or 5?
Yeah. In October, it'll be year 5 on TV.
Okay. So in 5 years, now the company has had time to breathe. When a company is starting up, you have everybody in the company is not looking out for the company. Every single person in the company is saying, all right, the brass ring is there. Who's going to take it? It's going to be me. And on the men's side, there was a deep enough roster at the time to where it all sorted itself out. We now know who the people are and who the people aren't. For the women, it's almost like the past year has been year one for them. Big signings, people really starting to come into their own. And so now, if you're Britt Baker, you come back and you're like, wow, I've got all these great people to work with, but I'm not going to let people, like I said, you know, forget who I am and what I can do. It's important for her to immediately put herself in there, not just wins and losses, but in the eyes of the AEW fans, which are pretty smart fans as far as the art form of wrestling, doing things like selling really well, telling a good story, not rushing everything, really letting this breathe for a little bit. I think that's going to be really, really important for her.
So many matches for her that did not exist. We talk about overexposed on television, which is a problem on AEW. It's happening concurrently with Orange Cassidy, Chris Jericho, and the Acclaimed. The Acclaimed are getting the brunt end of it right now, but she was very, very overexposed. And, you know, this is why we talk about sometimes it takes an injury to knock these people out of AEW, and it's fucking, someone's got to make a call. Like, let's just cool them off for 3 months. When they come back, they'll get the big return pop. But yeah, Duke, Dr. Britt Baker has returned. I mean, do you think, is this going to All In, or are we going to play our cards here? What are you thinking?
Charlie, I have an idea I want to throw at you. I think Toni Storm will, at the next pay-per-view, what is the next pay-per-view?
It's All In.
It's All In. Okay, so I think that we may have, if we're going to have the Toni Storm versus Mariah May match, we may have that on TV 4 weeks from now. And we may settle that. And I think Toni Storm is going to walk into All In with the world championship. And I think she's going to face Mercedes. Because I think Dr. Britt Baker will actually win this championship. And then she's going to have to face Jamie Hayter at Wembley.
That'd be cool. I mean, look, a lot of shit's going to have to happen. But
you can make it happen. You can make it happen. Yeah.
That is one thing where AEW traditionally has been pretty good at is if they need to pivot, if they end up running, that's the original term. They've been really good at pivoting and just being like, all right, this isn't working. Let's run to something else now. So they've got time.
That's why I'm really hoping that everyone's backstage is like, okay, we have Okada. What's happening?
Yeah.
Up next, we had Tetsuya Naito take on and defeat Jon Moxley for the IWGP World Title. This was, as expected, if you have been following our pre-show coverage, there was zero heat to it. It went 17 minutes, and it was just brutal to try and get through. I think their clash of styles, in my eyes, it doesn't work. I tried to give it a shot. Naito had two bursts of offense, and the second time he had a burst of offense, he won the match. It felt like a match that I just It's like at a bad pay-per-view main event that you're like, oh, we got to get through this defense. I don't know. I would have rather him faced fucking evil in this situation. At least we had House of Torture horseshit. But look, John Moxley, he's not on the G1. They need their champion on the G1. And look, Naito's beloved there. People were wanting him to win this championship when he won it at Wrestle Kingdoms. Yeah, nothing much here. We're not going to talk about John Moxley's New Japan ranks. There's not much to it. Plus, it's a New Japan title. So let's get into the main event here, where we're going to have some fun to talk about. Our main event match, Swerve Strickland takes on and hands his first loss in AEW to the international champion Will Ospreay to retain the AEW world title. It's always a good sign that your hottest story in the company is your main event title. That first, for starters, last pay-per-view, we talked about it. That was not the case. It was a good story with Swerve and Christian, but it was nowhere near the heat that everything else that a lot of the other stuff seemed to be getting. Duke, I'm going to toss it to you right away. What do you think of this match, and what do you think of Swerve being the first one to pin Will Ospreay in AEW?
Well, I think if you're going to have probably the hottest, fastest rising star in your company, in Will Ospreay, lose to anybody, your world champion that you spent the last year and a half, maybe longer, building up to become world champion and become the guy that carries the company on his back, I think that guy is the guy that can beat your champion. So I don't think Will gets affected by this at all. He still has his championship. He's still going to go on to defend it this Wednesday, I believe, against Daniel Garcia, right? So, excuse me. It's not like one of those things that I think I even thought about going into this match, because I think, Charlie, correct me if I'm wrong, but like in my head, when I look at a match with Will, I almost think about the match he's going to have more than any championships. Like, championships almost don't matter with Will, because his style of wrestling is so unique and interesting. It's almost like an event in and of itself that makes the championships kind of irrelevant in a sense, because like that's when I look forward to a Will match, it has nothing to do with, oh my gosh, is he going to win this championship? Like, I feel like he adds value to the championship, not the other way around. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know. Like,
his style is very different than anybody else. It's almost a UFC fighter.
Yeah.
Where you say, okay, you've got these two guys here, their styles, here's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Ospreay makes every match feel unique because of the way that he does things.
100%. And just to talk about the actual match a little bit, since you did ask me about that, Charlie, I'm scrolling down in my notes here. There was the opening sequence at the beginning of the match where they sort of like hit like a bunch of like, it felt like fighting game, almost reversals on each other. It was almost like, dividing by zero, it cancels each other out type shit,
Exactly.
And I love that.
Trying to sneak a quick one, but mm-hmm. Couldn't do it.
I really appreciated that aspect of this match, and because it's like Will and Kenny are kind of in the league of their own, like we talk about, and I think they get shorted for their technical abilities sometimes. That's why Will, you were talking about that stylistic thing with him, Brady, but I'm sure you remember the match he had with Ricochet back in the day that made everybody fucking
put him on the map. Yeah,
yeah, which was a great match, but Will wrestled a completely different style back then that he had to change because he had sat down and had a conversation with Jericho, where Jericho's like, what you're doing is awesome, but you're not going to be able to do it for your whole career. You're going to be dead, not dead, but you won't be able to walk by the time you're like 35, because he was just going too hard. So he completely changed his style, and I think, imagine having one of the craziest move sets in the world like he did, and then having to change your style completely, and then you invented one of the coolest, most unique move sets in the world to replace it. I mean, what an absolute legend. Will can literally do anything right now. It's pretty wild.
That'll help him in the long run, too. I look 100%. At it because I'm a singer by trade, and you look at some of these guys. Bring Me the Horizon is a band that I know Charlie and I really love. The lead singer was completely ruining his voice for years, singing live, singing on albums, and the way that he was singing and screaming was so unhealthy that he was going to burn out in 5-6 years. So what happened? He got some surgeries, went and got some proper vocal coaching, and now people complain about him not sounding the way that he used to, but now he can continue singing, and the band can stay together and make new music, and just because he's valuing himself. There's nothing, you don't have to kill yourself. And in the case of wrestling, the way that he was wrestling, killing yourself. That's really not a far exaggeration from what could have happened with the stuff that he was doing.
100%.
So at some point he had to stop. You can't just keep pushing yourself to the limit physically. So what are you going to do? You're going to push yourself to limit creatively, which was the proper choice.
100%. And I think one of the best aspects of Will's stuff, obviously we don't really get this for the match, but I just want to highlight this recently. He worked a lot because he didn't really have to cut. You know, promo cutting in Japan is obviously a really different thing because I just stick a camera in front of you at the end of a match and, you know, it's like a press conference type beat. So there's that. But like, I just think that the reason why Charlie was talking about how this angle going into this felt like the biggest thing on AEW was because every week that they came out and they did something, whether it was a contract signing or just a confrontation, just Will coming out to talk to the crowd, Swerve backstage or doing a video package, every time they came out and said something to each other leading up to this, it made it feel like the biggest thing going into Forbidden Door, which is impressive when it's two guys from AEW going, hey, this Will has his connections to Japan, but he's an AEW guy now. You know what I mean? And on a show where the whole point is the, collision of Japanese stars from New Japan with AEW stars and CMLL stars, that these two guys having the championship on the line was the biggest thing on this show. And I just think that's a very wrestling thing. It felt very, very at home to me.
Yeah. And Swerve, again, his presentation, he feels like a super big star. And when they brought him out again this time, he comes out with Jim Jones, and it's something new every week. He's bringing in someone from pop culture, from, you know, whatever. And his gear, dude, we don't talk about gear that much, but dude, Swerve's gear was fucking insane. Like, this guy feels like your champion. And I say that in the best way possible. And he's a fucking good champion. So, yeah, I thought this main event really delivered. And I think the main event was my favorite match on the show, actually. So let's go around the table here. I'm going to say that. Yeah, Swerve versus Ospreay gets my golden stamp, if you will, for this show of my favorite match. And yeah, I did not say that at Double or Nothing. Brady, overall, what'd you think of the pay-per-view? And what was your favorite match?
Let me see. Pacing was really good. Like you talked about, I think they picked the correct order of matches. Shows have to have up and downs energy-wise.
15 matches as well. The pacing was pretty damn good for that, because that could have been disgusting.
Yeah, we talked about it live in the moment. There was a move that completely put me off from the ending of the main event, where just devastating Swerve dropped Ospreay right on his head. And Ospreay just completely no-sold it and came by with an elbow and then popped up and was talking to his manager or whatever, whoever that was.
That didn't sell it at all.
That really that did really, really bug me, because they had been selling the arm of Swerve the entire match. So it's like, you can do all of this long-term storytelling, Ospreay. And I mean, he's a top three wrestler in the world, and he's probably not two or three. So the fact that you can do all that long-term storytelling and just, I don't know how long the match was. You went
27 minutes.
27-minute match, and you went 25 and a half minutes just doing all of the right things, all of the little things correctly, and then completely no-sold, getting dropped flat on your head. That one really bugged me. I would still say that the main event was probably my favorite, just because of the storytelling within the match, but that definitely put me off.
Yeah, it's like very minimal there. He should have done what he's done in the past, or what Danielson does in those moments, and at least like sell the legs for, like, even if it's 2 seconds, like a little wobbly leg, like something. But he literally pulled a Leo Rush from, God, I forgot the wrestling company, where he took a fucking ladder bump and instantly his finisher after. And what was it, CZL? Oh my God, what the fuck is that? I can't think of it right now.
If you want to do like the both men are down, even in that move, it would have been so easy for them to do oh my God, I think he caught him with a kick on his way around before he went on his head. Now they're both down. And
yeah, like,
there's plenty of things
you can do. If you do a little something, I can buy if you're trying to sell like it was an adrenaline thing. But you got to do a little something. It was a split second. I know exactly what spot you're talking about.
He flipped, he landed on his head. hopped up, hit him in the back with an elbow, and then it wasn't even like a
– hit him with his finisher. Hit him with a hidden blade.
There you go. So you hit him with the hidden blade, and then I thought it was going to be one of those, oh, hit him with a hidden blade, then they're both down.
Yep.
He didn't even do that.
I would have been fine with that too.
It was he hit him with a hidden blade and then just started talking to the guy on the outside. I'm like, oh, what are we doing?
Yeah, no, I can buy a quick pop-up if we're basing it off of adrenaline, but that was not the case there because he talked to the ref too. Duke, just overall thoughts on the show. What was your favorite match?
I had to think about this a little bit because I really did like Shingo versus Brian. I think they got there in the end with that match.
20 minutes on the dot, that one was.
And I think I also really liked a lot of Shingo matches in general. And there was like a part of me that kind of hoped Shingo would go further in the tournament just to see what some people would do on that side of the bracket against Shingo. You know what I mean? Can you imagine Pac versus Shingo, bro? God. Anyway, that match might actually be ludicrous. I think I'll agree with you guys. It's got to be like the best thing to watch on AEW right now. That's not MJF, you know? And then Will Ospreay is right up there too. And I kind of, Brady nailed it on the head twice in the two things that he said there. The first being that Will is a top three wrestler. And he's probably not two or three. Fucking, I agree hard agree there. I've been won over the last like 6 months with Will in AEW since he made his debut back in, what was it? Was it literally in January, Charlie?
Something like that, yeah.
February, somewhere in the first few months of the year.
And you get held to a higher standard.
Yeah, and he's excelled at that level. So it's you know, when you've had the time, you can look. He could still fuck it up, but I don't think he will at this point, considering where he's been at. I mean, we haven't been the world title within half a year of being in AEW. He's main eventing the second or third biggest pay-per-view of the year. You know what I mean? So, but anyway, the other thing is that I think that Swerve Strickland is going to be possibly – I think he could be the first person to – like lose the world title, go away for a few months and then come back and then immediately rewin the title. Like, I feel like he could be a person that does that. If we don't have somebody else come in, like if he doesn't get beat by somebody like Will, you know what I mean? Like, I think that we could see something like that happen. I'm curious.
He's one of the few people that feels like an AEW guy. I know he's been other places. He's been in NXT, but he feels like a homegrown guy.
Everything he's done to get to this point. I mean, everyone, I think, knows at this point. Everything that Swerve has done to become the guy, like I said, the buildup over the last year of watching him go from being kind of put in the back corner with Keith Lee as a tag team champion that really never got anywhere because they didn't really use them at all, to about 2 years later, he's main eventing pay-per-views and having angles with Hangman that get noticed like majorly because they're just the biggest thing on the show. I mean, Charlie, how many months were him and Hangman outshining pretty much everything else on the show with their stories?
Oh, it's the best feud of 2023.
I mean, and so watching him go from that all the way to where he is now, the full circle of it, and then watching him almost win the title a couple of different times, scratching and clawing, getting there, finally becoming the guy, and then going, and especially even with the stuff he's been doing out in like the actual world where he goes on busted open and they start trying to catch him in a weird corner with questions and he just handles it with ease and moves on and says, yeah, I'm the champion. This is my responsibility now.
He is the kind of guy you want representing your company as a champion. I think that way with both Cody and Swerve right now.
Yeah.
They are such good representatives for your company. It's a good sign. It's a good sign for wrestling in 2024 for sure. So
yeah.
Yeah, I think that'll be it for us, everyone. But thanks again if you stuck around the whole time. Again, we'll be back next week on Tuesday talking AEW, where we'll get the fallout of everything that happens here. And it sounds like, based on the little bits we've got on Collision, we're going to get the return of Hangman Adam Page this week. So, yeah, that should be pretty big. Yeah, it sounds like he might take on Jeff Jarrett as the wild card. So,
who is
GG? Jeff Jarrett winning his tournament side.
Who do we think the wild card is?
Hangman.
Oh,
sounds
Christ.
Like it's his return. Yeah, Hangman versus Danielson though. Winner goes to All In. Look,
we,
that might
we
be
gotta have the Joker, sexy. Man, bro. It can't always be Hangman. It can't just be Hangman as the Joker. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, he got a fucking promo on Collision. Now it seems like it's probably him. So thanks Brady for joining us. It was cool to get your aspect,
gotcha.
Get your viewpoint, I should say. As always.
Plus, I thought you were going to say to get his ass.
As always. Shout out Adam.
Shout out Adam. We'll catch you guys next week.
Hangman Page.
Thanks, everyone. Wardlow, take us home.
Yo, let's bring me the horizon.